You're listening to the Tipsy Nerds Book Club Podcast, your home for the best of science fiction and fantasy, with a twist. Whether you prefer your stories with dragons or aliens, your beverages shaken or stirred, fill your glass, relax, and join the conversation with your hosts, sci-fi and fantasy authors and proud Tipsy Nerds, Natalie Wright and R.S. Dabney.
Welcome, Tipsy Nerds. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror fans, gothic horror fans. I'm Natalie Wright, one of your hosts. And with me, as always, is my famous, infamous, wonderful, beautiful, fun co-host. I'll probably cut most of that because it's just, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm already a little tipsy. Robin Daphne. Robin, we start the show, we're already laughing. We're usually already a little bit tipsy. How are you doing
today? Today is no exception. I am doing great. And I'm always excited to be here chatting with you. But today is extra special because I, for the first time in, I don't know, 3 years, have published something new or will have something coming out. And we are talking about that today. And so it's a fun joy year round, but especially, you know, a nice holiday treat to be able to talk about something that I've written this time.
Absolutely. It's a treat for me. We're talking about an anthology that is releasing. By the time listeners are hearing this, it will be out. The Bleak Midwinter, The Darkest Night. It is edited by Damon Barrett Rowe, Cassandra L. Thompson, published by Quill and Crow Publishing. The copyright is December of 2022, and we're very excited about it. I highly recommend that you do not wait. Go out and get it right now, because I think our listeners will enjoy this anthology very much. Stories by a whole bunch of authors. Well, not a whole bunch, 10 authors, including, I just want to name a few, Trevor James Zapel, K.R. Wyland, Alia Bree Hall, Robin Dabney, of course, R.A. Busby, Amelia Manga, and a couple of others. We'll mention maybe some more, but 10 authors, The Bleak Midwinter, The Darkest Night. It is definitely a great anthology. The stories are gothic horror. But, you know, what I appreciated so much, and I'm already like talking about it before you've even introduced it, but I think the listeners will really enjoy the dark nature of it. But at the same time, it's very thought provoking. The story, some of them really hit in the feels and really provoke a lot of thought, as a great horror story should. So I really appreciated this anthology, all of the stories really hitting on the way that really good gothic horror should, you know, should hit. It should provoke some thought, some feeling. So we're very excited about it. And we're going to focus today on The Utabird, a story by Robin Dabney. And the drink that I'm drinking today is kind of an honor to that. Now, it's a dark story. And I couldn't think of a drink that was really, it was like, man, how do I really encapsulate the feeling of this? But what I went with was actually a dark chocolate cocoa with some vanilla vodka and with a little bit of peppermint sprinkles. And the reason why is the dark chocolate, first of all, it's warming, but it's also dark, like the story. And then the vodka is that bit of like bite with the story has. I'm calling it Helsinki hot cocoa in honor of the Utabird. But after reading the story, it's about the cold as much as it's, I think, about, well, what it's about. But the idea of cold is really encapsulated in your story, Robin. And so It definitely made me want something warm. So I'm drinking a vodka-laced hot cocoa with some peppermint thrown in because, you know, little bits of red are good. And what are you drinking, Robin?
That is important. Yeah, so I went with the cold theme, even though it is currently there's snow on the ground here and this isn't ideal for this season, but I felt like I had to have ice and I had to have red.
Yes.
There is a piece of it with some icicles and blood and I just was like, I should drink that. So basically, it's not super creative. It's pretty much a strawberry daiquiri with vodka instead of rum. Also going with vodka to honor the Finnish nature of the story.
Right.
And I'm calling it the Utbird's Revenge.
I like it. Well, whatever you're drinking, nerds, pull up a chair as we talk about this one. Robin, I first of all just want to start with maybe a setup, if you can give us, of your story, The Utbird. What does that even mean, that word? You know, what inspired the story, and kind of give us a setup for what The Utbird is about.
Yeah. So I've always been interested in folklore, folktales from around the world. And the literary agency I'm part of a couple years ago wanted to write an anthology together with the authors. And I think I somehow was able to pick the topic and I said, let's do folklore horror. And I really have always been intrigued with Scandinavian folklore. I think that stuff is so dark and creepy. And so I got online after we picked this topic and I'm looking through the different legends. And lo and behold, here appears the Utbird, who is an actual folktale from Finland, from Lapland. And he or she, I think they're not gendered, is basically the demonic zombie of a baby who latches onto travelers and becomes heavier as they move, and it demands to be buried. And these are children who have been abandoned in the woods, have died in the woods, different circumstances. But the main piece is that they want to be buried in a proper church cemetery, and they will kill you if you cannot accomplish this for them. And I read that and I thought, yeah, that's nice. That's right up my alley. I like that. I wrote
creepy
it
as the fuck, anthology. Man.
It's so creepy. It's funny. I'll go into a little piece of this in a minute, but yeah, I wrote this. The anthology never came to pass with the agency. And so I started shopping this around. Unfortunately and unfortunately, creepy as fuck isn't necessarily every magazine's dream. So I was so fortunate and happy that Quill and Crow Publishing picked this up for this anthology because it's perfect. It's such a perfect fit. I couldn't have asked for a better place. And the creepy as fuck is appreciated. And that makes me so happy. Yeah.
Yeah, it is perfect all the stories within the anthology, The Bleak Midwinter, they're not all about creepy as fuck babies that are attaching themselves to travelers' backs. You know, they all have a different, they're all about something different, but there does seem to be kind of a thread running through them. Do you have any insight, Robin, into that, into like what was the publisher looking for as terms of a thread to these stories?
Yeah. So Cassandra L. Thompson, who's the editor-in-chief at Quill and Crow, I asked her a couple questions and she was kind enough to send us some information that answers that question. And basically, the publishing house didn't want to do another holiday book that was like Krampus Black Christmas style. As wonderful that it is, it's been done a lot. And they wanted to focus more on like the cold nights of winter and the eeriness of the solstice and sort of the like quiet peace of self-reflection that people have during that time. Really highlighting also the atmosphere of the story with the darkness, the woods. All of these stories have some element almost with snow and forest, and right. They don't all have dead babies on the backs of travelers, but they have something similar in a way. But yeah, the purpose, or I guess what they're hoping to convey with this, was to take these cool, creepy stories, but also to pick ones and include ones in this anthology that had something to say, that had some deeper meaning or something that made you think or was telling not just a shock and awe story, but something that you could sit in the quiet stillness of the bleak midwinter and reflect upon. So I think all of these stories have that.
Yeah, definitely. They've achieved that for sure with the stories chosen. And the Utbird is no exception. I mean, why don't you do a little setup for us about who was the main character and what is the Utbird about? And I'm probably pronouncing that very badly because I don't speak Norwegian, but
I think I say the Utbird. So I think you're doing it right.
Okay.
So this story is about a disgraced wildlife photographer who has been sent on this task to find this rare albino reindeer in the Lapland province of Finland, which is way above the Arctic Circle. This is sort of his last opportunity to save his career. He goes up there and interacts with a lover of his who he has sort of seen over the years. And as he's leaving town, he was unsuccessful in his endeavors to find this reindeer. He stumbles upon the reindeer, and I don't want to give too much away, but ends up following it into the woods. And you can guess what maybe he encounters there. And one of the things I love about this story is Jaska is the name of my main character, is not a likable person. And I usually always write likable characters, especially likable main characters. That's important to me. And so it was fun to dive into this person who is kind of like a piece of shit and to play with that and run with that. This was really freeing for me in so many ways. It was an experiment in a new genre with a new type of character. And until now, Yaska has always been like the black sheep of my literary family. But I actually had a sort of had this soft spot knowing that it's coming out. And I'm like, oh, wow, he's joining Riley and Clark, who are some of my other main characters. And he's like actually a being now to me, which is cool. But yeah, this creatively was just such a fun project for me to play with.
So what's odd, Robin, is you and I talk all the time. We know each other really well. This is the only work of yours that I've only read your short stories completely, like your novels. I haven't read a whole novel. Mm-hmm. I've read and kind of done some comments or critique on a few, but not like read the whole thing. But I do think that what's really interesting is you're talking about how this was sort of outside of maybe the comfort zone. You pushed yourself. But there's a quality to your writing that's always Robin Dabney, which is really interesting to me, how there's like a DNA to a writer, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like you pick mm-hmm. up their work and it doesn't matter what they're writing, they're sort of there. And yeah. I definitely see that here. Robin has, for those of you who haven't read any of Robin's work, she has a way with words. Like there's a way that you put phrasing together and you have a pacing that's really lovely. And even in a dark story, there's a beautiful quality to your writing that I really appreciate. One thing I noticed here, Robin, was of course the story has a creepy quality. You do a really great job of building out the tension. Like we know something bad is going to happen. I mean, it's in an anthology called The Bleak Midwinter. We know it's about, you know, creepy zombie babies. We know that shit's coming, but you know, you string it along. You don't know what exactly is going to happen. You don't know when, you don't know how. It's a really great tension building, but the quality of cold, your ability to describe cold. I read a story once by another young man who lived in, I believe, Finland. And I was editing his work and he wrote a story about cold featured in his story. And I was like, okay, this is a person who really knows cold. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like really can describe cold. I felt mm-hmm. that here. It's almost like winter inhabited this story in a really visceral way. So it feels like you're writing from personal knowledge. Have you spent time like in the wilderness being so cold you thought you were going to die? Because like you described it so well, so thoroughly that I'm like, damn, was she like ever, you know, like afraid she was going to die from the cold?
So this is actually based on a true story and I am Yaska. Yeah. No, thank you for all those really nice things you said. Yeah, I see cold almost as one of the main characters of this story. And I think I'm new to the gothic horror genre, but from what I've read and from the notes Cassandra sent over, atmosphere and the surrounding environment is a character in those types of things. And so I really leaned into that because I think, yes, dead zombie babies are a creepy force, but so is the danger of the woods at sub-zero temperatures above the Arctic Circle in a critical time. And so I wanted to play with that. I have not personally been in danger, but I am very dramatic with cold. So I felt like, you know, it's like I go out and I'm cold and I think I'm going to die. And so I am totally an expert to write a book. You know, I've done some mountaineering. I've lived in cold places, but also the desert. I think I'm just drawn to darkness in a way. I'm such a light and happy, good-natured person, but I really enjoy, there's this connection between me and this darkness. And I think when I tap into it, it's just easy for me to tap into. So yeah, I would say I have an eye for darkness and I'm dramatic in the cold.
your descriptions for things at times, I just found myself, actually feeling the feeling of cold as I read the story, the way you describe it, your descriptions for how he's experiencing it in his body, you know, mm-hmm. it definitely felt to me very authentic. It felt to me like, and that's a really great quality of your writing. You're able to like tap into these visceral feelings and describe them in new ways, not in like these tropey, just stereotypical ways. You like reach a little bit further and it makes it much more interesting to read than
thank you
some. So yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. It's hard to talk about this story without giving too much away about it, but I think that our listeners will really enjoy it. It's the first one in the anthology, which is interesting, the placement of it. And it really mm-hmm. sets the tone, I think, well, you know, for what comes after. And I'm so excited for people to have something of Robin Dabney to sink their teeth into right now as we wait for your next project to be published next year. So
2024.
Well, okay. Yeah. I'm already in 2023. Like,
yeah.
Listeners, this is the world of publishing. You're always like 6 months ahead. You know what I'm saying? You really are. So it's like, what?
Very good point.
Because you're already planning your catalog or your schedule out ahead. Yeah. But So really wonderful. Do you think you'll write more gothic horror or more horror stories? Is this something you want to play with more?
Absolutely. I think where the piece I will dive into is folklore horror. It's a vein I really enjoy. It's very close to the kind of dark fantasy that I already write. I really think it's important that there's something to say in that. I think some people hear horror and they think this isn't going to be quality writing. It's not going to be storytelling. It's just slasher, nothing to it. And I think what this showed me, I never have been one of those people who thought that, but what this showed me is that I can say a lot in horror, and it's also creepy and fun. And reading the other people's stories too was inspiring to me, like in all the ways you can stretch yourself in this. And so I have already started actually a second one that I got inspired to write when I was in Scotland. So I've already got a folk tale that's going to screw some things up for a person in the Scottish Highlands. So that will be hopefully ready sometime next year.
Perfect. I can't wait to read it. I read horror a bit more when I was younger, but then I stopped reading it for a while. And then with this show, we picked some horror stories up. And I have to say, it's a genre that I really enjoy more than I thought that I would, you know, when mm-hmm. we had some on our slate. And I guess, you know, it's just, if it's good writing, it's good writing. But so many people, I mean, our fans of the show aren't these people. Some people, like as a writer, okay, say I'm talking to, I don't know, a mom that I've met at my child's school. And they say, what do you do? And I say, oh, I'm a writer. And they say, oh, what kind? And I say, oh, I write sci-fi and fantasy. And there's often either a look or a statement that makes you feel like, oh, isn't that cute? Or isn't that fun? Oh, I bet you have fun with that. It's like fun. It's freaking torture. You know, it's writing is fucking torture. Like, you don't wish it on your worst enemy. It's like the horror of just getting it out. Right. Hemingway. It's easy, open your vein and bleed. Right. It's like that. So anyway, but people who read sci-fi, fantasy and horror know that it's a genre where it begs you to consider these big questions and mm-hmm. think about relationships and all that stuff. And The Bleak Midwinter absolutely delivers on that promise. One of the stories I wanted to kind of do a shout out to, there's two actually. And so Robin and I didn't talk about this ahead of time, about who our two favorites or our favorites in the anthology. So this will be a surprise. I really enjoyed All Her Little Bones by R.A. Busby.
One of my top two as well.
Wow. And then Where Ghosts Walk by Trevor James Zabel.
Okay. I loved that one too. I had The New Moon Through Glass by E.M. Linden. I really enjoyed that one, but I also loved the Where Ghosts Walk story.
So these two I picked, and we'll talk about the other one too, are very different from one another. I just want to, the shout out to Trevor James Zabel. It's called Where Ghosts Walk. It's set in Germany in the World War One era. Mm-hmm. I felt that it was, he did a really excellent job again of pulling that taut rope of mystery really tight.
I felt the tension the whole time.
The tension is just, oh, it's there and it's building and it's like, something's going to snap. The world building was excellent. I grew up on a farm and his descriptions of like, and I grew up with that dad. So all of his descriptions of those people and that mm-hmm. place, I personally related to it a lot and felt it was really authentic and the tension of a family like that. So I just really appreciated how he captured that.
And I feel like he also did a really good job of of showing. So, right, there was obviously abuse happening. There's all these things, but he never like said, but you knew. I felt like he really balanced like all these dark elements that were happening without just like throwing it in your face. Plus you have these external creepy things that are happening. And yeah, that was also up there. I was torn in that one, but I felt also a fantastic story.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty brilliantly written, and I really mm-hmm. enjoyed that one. And then we had to talk about All Her Little Bones mm-hmm. by R.A. Busby. It's really a brilliant story in so mm-hmm. many ways. This one actually is it also an Utbard tale?
I was reading it and I was like, oh my gosh, we are on the same page.
Yeah. So it's interesting to contrast in these two mm-hmm. stories, because they're similar in terms of maybe a core inspiration, but they're so different. Mm-hmm. And so that's really intriguing. What were you going to say, Robin, about this story?
I really loved her voice as a writer in that story. From the first paragraph, I was like, wow, this mm-hmm. is fantastic. And just from then, I just blew through that story because it was so engaging and interesting. And again, she also did a great job of showing you all these things without, you know, there were some flashbacks, but nothing was in your face. You were given all of this information. And then even at the end, there's a little ambiguity to what actually happens then. And you're left pondering, but not dissatisfied. And so I really, that is a fantastic story.
Yeah, it's written in a really different and unusual way too. The concept of the story is it's a hiker, and she's mm-hmm. out in this wilderness. Like a lot of these stories, wilderness plays a big part, where the wilderness and the setup for that comes a little bit from, I'm trying to remember what, The Forest Call by Alia Bree Hall. That's mm-hmm. a story that comes after the Utbard that again feels very like folktale-y. You know, it's sort of a Red Riding Hood mm-hmm. retelling. So it's in that Grimm's fairy tale sort of feeling, but it's mm-hmm. completely new. It's not real mm-hmm. in your face that it's Red Riding Hood. But that story being placed where it is in the anthology is brilliant, because it really sort of sets up that concept of the forest as an entity of the earth, the woods, everything about it being its own thing. And then, mm-hmm. so when All Her Little Bones, this story comes along and some of the others, she's in this dark, kind of menacing, you know, physical environment where she mm-hmm. begins to encounter these things. And we're left wondering what is real and what is the imagination. That's another theme that kind of plays in a lot of these stories. Yeah. As the cold takes hold, as the darkness becomes more oppressive. Mm-hmm. A lot of things, the stories, there's weight on people's backs, so there's weight in their hearts. There's an untold horror or an untold sorrow that's nibbling at them.
Yep.
R.A. Busby in the story, All Her Little Bones, does this so well, where she's got this hiker out in the wilderness, gets sort of lost or disoriented, running from something that's a little scary, and finds herself in this shack. And the story begins to unfold, and it's, she does it in a series. There's like some entries into a diary and mm-hmm. a time, and the way that the story is written, it really does a great job with the pacing of keeping you moving through the story. So it's a really clever way that she wrote it.
Yeah.
And it's eerie as shit mm-hmm. and feels like it could really happen.
It does.
As like spooky and fantasies like in a way that it is, it's also got that realism where it's like, you almost feel like it really did happen. And this is, you know.
It plays on that and that human trope of being alone in the woods and the isolation and the darkness and seeing things and creatures and thinking the forest is encroaching. It's like, it's a nightmare that we all have. I mean, on varying levels, but it's such a, I think it took all these things that are natural human fears and then added this unique, cool story to that.
Right. I think part of the way that the writer chose to tell the story by bringing in the journal entries that come in at the beginning and then at the end, again, sort of reiterate this theme or this idea about the story. There are a couple of lines mm-hmm. I actually wanted to just small lines, but they made me actually laugh. This writer has a way with words. And so at one point she's describing, this isn't actually happening, but it's a fear of what she'll see Okay. Mm-hmm. And she's describing this old man who she's fearful of. Like, what's his intention? Is he going to come after me? What's going on? His member was dangling like a withered parsnip. And I'm like, that is like true. Like, that's a really good way to describe a really elderly. Anyway, I love that description. And then there's another point basically talking about, I think this is a moment where she's saying, you know, like, even if Jesus was on a pogo stick, on a pogo stick. Oh, like, where does that description come from? But it made me, you know, laugh at a moment. There's, you know, giving us moments of levity within the story is another really great thing that great horror writers do. And, you know, she was able to do that. It reminded me of, like, Stephen King can do that, you know, like where you're, mm-hmm. there's a moment of levity and then you turn around and it's dark as shit, you know? And so that was really great. But Jesus on a pogo stick, that one's going to stick with me probably for a while, that description.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Really good story. Tell me about the one that you mentioned that I didn't mention.
Yeah. So the other one I really, really enjoyed was, and I want to say, and we'd say it at the end anyway, but there was not a dud in the bunch.
Right.
So we're picking out our favorites to chat about also for the sake of time, but every story was cool, well-written, had unique elements. And so don't want to dog anybody by just picking these. These are just the ones that really stood out to us personally. The other one that I selected was The New Moon Through Glass by E.M. Linden. And this was the one with set in England, I believe also during World War I or II. Right. And a woman and her husband take on these two children who have been orphaned, presumably. And one of them is creepy, not quite right. She's, you know, doesn't know what to think of him. But throughout, there's all these pieces of her not necessarily wanting to be a mom or to have that responsibility or not want, like, there was this big struggle about motherhood in a couple different ways. I don't want to give too much away. And then a decision she makes at the end that, not to be on the nose, comes back to haunt her. I think, especially for me as a woman who's not, I would not do this, but who has, you know, struggled with ideas of motherhood and if I want that and whatnot. I felt like there was something in that that also hit on fears that I have about myself or about my ability to be a parent or something like that. And so I think that's part of why that one moved me. But I really got sucked into that story as well.
Right. I love that. Actually, there were a couple where that issue of motherhood and mm-hmm. issues about babies and children. And as a mom, I could really relate to some of those feelings, those dark feelings of mm-hmm. that I appreciated too, because, you know, as we have stories by women that are published, as opposed to, you know, not hearing those voices, as we hear different voices, we get these different perspectives. And it's fascinating to see women actually being able to give voice to fears, worries, sorrows around children or not having children or I don't know what I'm trying to say, but the idea
I like that there's space for that.
Yes. Because mm-hmm. there's a lot to say about motherhood that hasn't been said. It's not all perfect, beautiful cherubs singing in the heavens.
Right.
Motherhood is not for the faint of heart, and having children or not having children is a big thing for women, a big topic. Yep. And I am definitely glad to see these stories adeptly talking about that.
Yeah, me too. And just to plug the publishing house, Quill and Crow is women owned and operated. And so I think that's probably also part of why we see such a good representation of women in these stories. Oftentimes, I feel like with horror, you get in horror anthologies, you get a lot from men, they're well written and they're interesting. But this had an overwhelming number of stories that did encompass those themes that you just talked about. And I felt like that was maybe why we loved it so much too, is because it was horror also for women and accessible to women, not just as an entertainment value, but as something to ponder and think about and reflect upon. So
yeah, really well done, well edited, well written, well chosen, well placed. I also really appreciated the flow and the way that the stories were placed. So I definitely highly recommend it, and so happy that we had an opportunity to read this one. And you're in such good company there, Robin, with some really, all of you, the writers in this, all of them, every single one of them absolutely deserves to be read more widely.
Yeah. I feel very honored to have been included in this list, to be the first story in the anthology. That was super cool to see.
Yeah.
to see the Utbert and Jaska in there. And just one more thing, the Bleak Midwinter, The Darkest Night is the first volume in a two-part anthology. So you will also have Bleak Midwinter Solstice Light coming in January. So the first one releases December 17th. The second one, which we have not had the chance to read yet, but it's going to be a little bit more light and hopeful. Still dark with that gothic horror element, but a little lighter. So if that's more your speed, you know, check out the second one or get them both. That one will release, I believe, January 17th, the second volume.
One thing I found fascinating, Robin, is that you and I, we talked to this before, like every year when we go to record a Christmas episode or a holiday episode, we always pick some kind of bleak story. I don't think we intended it at the beginning. It just sort of happened that way. And now it's become, I think, a tradition. So this was so perfect to fit into that. But why do you think it is that we actually enjoy some of these darker stories around the holidays? What are your thoughts, or any thoughts that you have from the publisher on why publish a Bleak Midwinter anthology?
Yeah. So I asked Cassandra about that question. What are the benefits of darker stories during the holidays, and why do we need them? And I'll actually read her answer back, because I think it hits on everything and I don't want to butcher it. But she said, "I've always thought of winter as a shadow period where we take a break from the happy chaos of summer and turn inward to reflect on our lives, our spiritual growth, etc., and prepare for spring. I think self-examination and the consideration of the darker parts of self deters a lot of people. Although they claim the holidays are filled with light and warmth, I see a bunch of unhappy people scrambling to get gifts and cutting each other off in traffic. I feel the true meaning of things can get lost when we try to force happiness. I often wonder if people would appreciate winter if they took time to pause and see what secrets isolation has to offer."
I like that.
Yeah, I really liked that. And I think this story does that. And I think maybe that's why we read Krampus and why we read the others that we've read, is because it kind of feels real in a time, even if it's fantasy or horror, kind of feels real in a time where maybe there's a lot of superficial things. Good. I'm not saying they're bad, but
right.
I don't know. Maybe it's a touchstone to reality when we read darker things during the holidays.
Just taking a moment to pause and to be quiet. And so these stories really, for me, hit that note of the self-reflective time of the darkest day, the longest night, and, you know, that pause, that reflection time. So I actually, as we're talking, I kind of want to pull out my copy of Krampus, and I think I'm going to reread it, because I really enjoyed that story last year. And I used to read the Dickens Christmas Carol, but Krampus might be my new go-to for this time of year, because I really like the sentiment in that story a lot. How about you, Robin?
I think all of these, as much as isolation and loneliness and darkness are themes in all of these, they're hitting on things, like you said, that are also very like human. And as I think also as we age, and I know I'm younger, but traumatic things start to happen and everything's a little bit heavier. Holidays are a little bit heavier. And so reading this stuff, even though the themes are isolation and loneliness, you actually feel less alone because you see things that happen to you or that you feel in these stories. And so in spite of them being about one thing, they actually make you feel, or for me, less alone and less isolated.
Absolutely. The connection through the story, the thread, the human thread of story. Really well said. And why we all read in the first place, I think, or one of the reasons, is actually it's the connection, the alchemy of that writer conveying the emotion, the thought, the idea. I love it. And these are all so well done. So I really appreciate that you shared it with us, and that I got to read, be one of the early readers of this anthology. I really do hope that our listeners pick up a copy and read these stories, because I think they'll enjoy, you know, the whole anthology, and surely within the 10, you'll find several that will really, you know, hit home for you probably.
Yeah. I hope you guys do pick it up, read it. Let us know what you think about the anthology. I would love to hear what you think about Jaska and the Utbird. And we wish
really well-written character.
Thank you. And we wish everybody a happy holidays, happy solstice, happy nothing, whatever it is that you choose. And cheers.
Enjoy your bleak midwinter.
Enjoy. Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Tipsy Nerds Book Club podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and share the fun with your friends and family. Want a recipe for a cocktail you heard here? You can find recipes as well as show notes, episode transcripts, and helpful links on our website, tipsynerdsbookclub.com. And as always, join us next week for a new episode of Libations and Geeking Out. Cheers.